Such were the Ad people. They rejected the signs of their Lord and Cherisher, disobeyed his messengers, and followed the command of every powerful, obstinate transgressor. And they were pursued by a curse in this life and on the day of judgment. At the beginning of 1990, press releases declared, "Fabled lost Arabian city found. The Atlantis of the sands. Urba." Nicholas Clapp, an amateur archaeologist, Arabophile and winning documentary filmmaker, had found the legendary city. His guide for the expedition was Arabia Felix, a book written by the English researcher Bertram Thomas in 1932. Arabia Felix refers to the Roman designation for the southern part of the Arabian Peninsula, which today includes Yemen and much of Oman. To the Greeks, Eudaimon Arabia, to the medieval Arab scholars Al-Yaman As-Saida, all meaning fortunate Arabia, as its people were known to be the most fortunate people of their time. Urba possessed a strategic location. It served as middleman in the spice trade between India and places south of the Arabian Peninsula. In addition, frankincense, a rare aromatic resin, was produced. This, in those days, was as valuable as gold. The English researcher Thomas described these lucky tribes at length. He claimed to have found traces of an ancient city founded by one of these tribes in the form of well-worn tracks. This was the city known as Urba. Nicholas Clapp was convinced of the existence of the described lost city. First, he located the tracks discovered by Thomas. Clapp then applied to NASA to provide satellite images of the area. He then proceeded to study ancient manuscripts and maps in Huntington Library, California. It was after a short research that he came upon a map drawn by the Greek-Egyptian geographer Ptolemy in 200 AD. The map revealed an ancient city in the region, as well as the trails that led to it, trails corresponding exactly with satellite images taken by NASA. And thus it was that the location of the legendary city was finally discovered. The Atlantis of the sands, the city Urba. The prophet Hud had been sent to Ad to summon his people to believe in God, like many other prophets before him. "O my people, worship God. Ye have no other God than him. O my people, ask forgiveness of your Lord, and turn to him in repentance." And like those that came before them, the people of Ad reacted with animosity, and they accused him of imprudence and untruthfulness. "O Hud, no clear sign hast thou brought us, and we are not the ones to desert our gods on thy word, nor shall we believe in thee." "Do you build a landmark on every high place to amuse yourselves? And do ye get for yourselves fine buildings in the hope of living therein forever? And when ye exert your hand, do ye do so like men of absolute power? Fear him who has bestowed on you freely all that ye know. Freely has he bestowed on you cattle and sons, and gardens and springs. Fear him, for truly I fear for you the penalty of a great day." And still the people of Ad remained stubborn and rebelled against God. And indeed, like many before them, Ad, the people of the prophet Hud, were destroyed, annihilated by a furious sandstorm of violent proportions, an event of such proportions that it left so little behind as to lay doubt to all they had marveled in. From the onset, researchers were in no doubt that this ruined city, the Atlantis of the sands, belonged to the people of Ad. Among the structures unearthed were the towers cited in the Quran, also a distinctive feature of Urba, the strongest proof that the unearthed site was Iram, the city of Ad. The identity of Ad people who found the city of Iran has created much debate. No historical mention is made of the people of such a developed culture and civilization. This is by no means surprising, and can even be expected of an era in which written communication had not yet been established. Also, the Ad lived in South Arabia, and therefore had a restricted relationship with other peoples living in the Mesopotamian region and the Middle East. Important information about the descendants of Ad served to paint a picture of these nebulous people. Four historical peoples claim the coveted title of Fortunate Arabia: the Hadramites, the Sabaeans, the Meneans, and the Katabians, all situated in South Yemen, the location of the Atlantis of the Sands, Urbar. Dr. Mikhail H. Rahman, a researcher at the University of Ohio, believes that Ad are the ancestors of the Hadramites, one of the four people who lived in South Yemen. The Hadramites appeared around 500 BC and reigned over South Yemen for an extensive period of time. The Greeks described them as the richest race in the world. Historical records show that the Hadramites had mastered the agriculture of the coveted plant, frankincense. And equal to their ability in agriculture and merchandise was their architectural superiority, no doubt inherited from their forerunners. The noble Quran makes reference to a lush haven boasting many springs and gardens, a far cry from the dry deserts encountered today. Records show that less than a few thousand years ago, the areas that have become deserts had once been very productive green lands, boasting a rainbow of flora and fauna. Revolutionary satellite imaging has revealed an extensive system of ancient canals and dams of a capacity to support an estimated 200,000 inhabitants in associated cities. A researcher claimed that the area around Maghrib was so fertile that it is conceivable to imagine that the whole region between Maghrib and Madramut was once under cultivation. The Greek classical writer Pliny described this region as being fertile and mist-covered with mountains, rivers, and unbroken tracts of forest. And it can thus be concluded that this region was indeed covered with not only desert, but also fertile, habitable land. And so, in the sands of these very deserts which surrounded their fertile havens, the Ad have perished, destroyed by a furious wind, buried at the hand of God, for they too had rejected truth and entertained evil. Thamud were descendants of Ad. Though their remains have been located in the north of the Arabian Peninsula, their roots extend to southern Arabia, where the Ad are known to have lived. And just as Ad did, Thamud rejected the warnings of God, only to face the same fate. The Thamud are historically well documented, confirmed by numerous archaeological findings. The Quran tells of the struggle of the people and their chosen prophet, Salih. Slandered and condemned by his people, he, who had once been one of them, now bade them, "Worship God! Ye have no other deity than the one true God, he who produced you from the earth and settled you therein." Antagonistic was their reply, "Just as the people of Noah and Hud before them." Thoughts of evil manifested in their heads, their intention to kill their sacred prophet. The prophet Salih had decided to test his people. "Here is a she-camel. She has a right of watering, and you have a right of watering. Touch her not with harm, lest the penalty of a great day seizes you." Yet in defiance they hamstrung the camel, and in arrogance they proceeded to mock their prophet, Salih. Little did they know that in 3 days they would be no more. For the Thamud rejected their lord and cherisher, and in an almighty blast they were removed from sight. Although the Thamud probably originated in southern Arabia, a large group apparently moved northwards at an early date, traditionally settling on the slopes of Mount Jabal Athlab. Recent archaeological work has revealed numerous Thamudic rock writings and pictures, not only on Jabal Athlab, but also throughout central Arabia. Thamud paid the price for not obeying their messenger. Just like those before and after them, destruction was the price of denial of the truth. Signs, so that ye shall know them. Ancient Egyptian civilization, one of the oldest in the world, had an organized state with the most advanced social order of its age. Egyptians had discovered writing around the 3rd millennium BC and made extensive use of it in the form of hieroglyphics. They utilized the River Nile to enhance their livelihood. The Egyptians lay protected by the natural geography of the region. But this civilized society nurtured the reign of pharaohs. As a ruling people, they were puffed up with pride, turned aside and blasphemous. In the end, neither their advanced civilizations, their social and political orders, nor their military successes could save them from being destroyed. The Egyptians had settled the Nile Valley. Their civilization was based on the fertility of the powerful River Nile, which was the predominant factor for the success of Egypt as a nation. Control of the Nile meant control of Egypt. And it was the pharaohs of Egypt who wielded such power, a power which made them capable of being accepted as religions of the gods in their distorted polytheistic religion of old Egypt, a power that reduced the people to submission, establishing a regime of unimaginable absolutism. And it came to pass that in time, the pharaohs definitely believed that they were indeed gods. Products of their natural environment, the ancient Egyptians remained isolated from the external world. Passing centuries transformed this isolation into a dark bigotry. Egyptians thus upheld fixed viewpoints, locked against new developments and novelties. Their religion essentially consisted of the state, which hailed Pharaoh as a holy being. From time to time, warners were sent to Egypt, and among them was Prophet Joseph, whose arrival ushered in the children of Israel into Egypt. But ancient Egyptians refused to abandon their idolatrous and perverted beliefs. And it was thus that God sent the prophet Moses to Egypt. Born into the enslaved race of ancient Egypt, Moses had been saved by God from death at Pharaoh's hands. Set afloat on the River Nile, Moses had been found by the Pharaoh's wife, whose barren womb ached for the comfort of a child. This was how Moses came to spend his childhood among the royal household of Pharaoh. And so he remained until one day, as a man, Moses, in defense of one of the children of Israel, had killed an Egyptian. On the run for his life, he came to Madian and served his time. It was here that God spoke directly to Moses, appointing him with the station of prophethood. His task? To invite Egypt to the religion of truth and to save the children of Israel from slavery. And to this end, Moses confronted the Pharaoh, but to no avail. As an indication of the eternal torment of the next world, God sent them a number of disasters as separate phenomena attacking the very heart of their subsistence, the River Nile. So we sent plagues on them. Wholesale death, locusts, lice, frogs, and blood. Signs openly self-explained, and they were steeped in arrogance, a people given to sin. Every time the penalty fell on them, they said, O Moses, on your behalf call on thy Lord in virtue of his promise to thee. If thou wilt remove the penalty from us, we will truly believe in thee, and we will send away the children of Israel with thee. But every time we remove the penalty from them according to a fixed term, which they had to fulfill, behold, they broke their word. Thus it was that by inspiration Moses led his people out of the land of Egypt, pursued unrelentingly by Pharaoh and his men. A mighty sea lay across the path of the children of Israel. But Moses' faith was steadfast, and God, in answer to his plight, parted the seas and set him and the children of Israel free. Not so was the fate of Pharaoh and his army. The tyranny and rebellion was buried under the mighty river as a reminder for all that would follow. Verily, this is a sign. But most of them do not believe. And verily, thy Lord is he, the exalted in might, most merciful. No common agreement as to the location of the parting of the sea by Moses has to this date been reached. Details on the subject are absent from the Quran. Some sources show the Mediterranean shores of Egypt to be the location. A quote from Encyclopedia Judaic reads, "The majority opinion today identifies the Red Sea of the Exodus with one of the lagoons on the shores of the Mediterranean." In the book of Exodus, it is said that Pharaoh and his men were drowned in the Red Sea. It is believed that the word translated as the Red Sea is in actual fact the Sea of Reeds, used to refer to the Mediterranean coast of Egypt, where reeds, nurtured by the delta alluviums, are produced. The blood in the River Nile is believed to be the metaphorical description of the Nile turning solid red, an event caused by a certain type of bacteria. Recent explanations favored protozoan, zooplankton, both salt and freshwater algae, phytoplankton blooms, and dinoflagellates, all of which serve to deoxygenate the water, producing toxins harmful to both fish and frogs. Patricia A. Tester of the National Marine Fisheries Service, writing in the annals of the New York Academy of Science, noted that while fewer than 50 out of approximately 5,000 known phytoplankton species are toxic, those which do possess toxins can be dangerous to aquatic life. And so it appears that in the time of Pharaoh that this chain of disasters occurred, the River Nile had become contaminated. The fish, an important source of nutrition, died and decomposed. Without these predatory fish, frogs had been allowed to breed freely and overpopulate the river. These migrated to land and there died and decomposed. Lands adjacent to the Nile thus became foul and the waters poisonous. Extinction of the frogs allowed bugs such as locusts and lice to reproduce excessively. And it was through these natural processes that God allowed Pharaoh a glimpse of his might. Miracles from which unbelievers may take heed. Warnings from which to learn. Signs of his might, of which to be afraid. The city of Mahrib, once the majestic residence of the Sabaean people, remains a desolate ruin today. undoubtedly an example and a warning to those who insist upon the reckless repetition of blunders of the past. The community of Sabah was one of the four prominent civilizations of South Arabia. They are believed to have been established between 1000 and 750 BC, and to have collapsed around 550 AD. Records of their existence commenced when they began paying taxes to the Assyrian kingdom in order to pass through northern Arabia to the Mediterranean and the Gaza. A civilized people of technological and military accomplishment, the Sabaean state had one of the strongest armies in the region. Expansionist by nature, they had conquered the lands of the old Katavan state. Many lands on the African continent were theirs to claim. They are known to have defeated the army of Marcus Aurelius Gallus, governor of Egypt for the Roman Empire. The Sabaean state was without doubt one of the superpowers of its time. And as their empire did grow, so did their wealth, and so did their self-belief and arrogance. And so it was in the capital city of the Sabaean state, Mahrib, that the Sabaean people had been held accountable for their ingratitude for the prosperity that God had bestowed on them. The capital city of Mahrib was one of the most developed cities of the time. Its location close to the river Adhana was of definite advantage. At the point where river Adhana met the river Jabal Balak, the Sabaean had constructed the Mahrib Dam. 16 meters in height and 620 meters in length, 9,600 hectares of land had been irrigated. Through this, the region became famous as the best irrigated and most beautiful area of Yemen. And yet it was through this that the Sabaean people had been destroyed. In the year 542 AD, the Mahrib Dam collapsed. The result was the flood of Arim, mentioned in the Quran. And with the destruction of the Mahrib Dam came the end of the Sabaean state. And with their destruction, yet another sign. Historical data and findings verify Quranic accounts of this disaster. These people who did not listen to the exhortations of their prophet and who ungratefully rejected faith were in the end punished. Do not deny him who created thee out of dust. He is God, and there is no power but with him. These are all very significant signs. Noah's people who sank under the waters of a dreadful flood. Ad, who were engulfed by an unceasing sandstorm. Lot's people who practiced sodomy and were wiped off the face of the earth with lava tides and earthquakes. Pharaoh's army that disappeared in the sea. And many other nations that were wiped off the face of the earth by God because of their blasphemy. Verily in these are signs for men imbued with understanding to heed. And as these historical nations, rife with degeneration and transgression, perished through natural disasters at the hand of God, such will be the fate of the current societies that refuse to give the might of God its due respect. With the dawn of a new millennium, we must then ask ourselves, is the pattern of those nations who have faded away present in our modern world of steel, glass, silicone chips and internets? For some of us, there is a sense of immortality, a sense that man has reached a stage where he cannot be touched. We have solutions for problems and cures for diseases. We explore the genes, the basic coding of every human. We delve into space and define it. But in our society lie the ill traits of those who have passed before. Homosexuality, prostitution, drug abuse, corruption are so widespread, even the most pious of us accept them as part of the times. Greed and selfishness wreak havoc on the natural world around us, a world that is ecologically essential to our very own survival. The earth that sustains us is raped of oil and vegetation, a slave to humanity's insatiable thirst for wealth. The media has been said to desensitize the human mind to a state where nudity and immorality are deemed okay. Children are given family planning advice and are encouraged to fornicate, children as young as 15 years old. Sexual preference is advertised in schools and institutions as easily as career advice. AIDS and many other diseases are at a zenith, and still the evil lifestyles go on. Superficial relationships, where marriage is scorned and fornication involving multiple partners abound. Is mankind so blind that he cannot see that various plagues have preceded the ultimate destruction of nations? Was this not the case of the Pharaoh who tormented the children of Israel? The stars of the radio and the screen, who serve as role models for the next generation, propagate godlessness and glamorize the vile and irresponsible lifestyles they lead. Even presidents of the so-called civilized world are consistent in their capacity for lies and their love of adultery. Television networks ruthlessly vie for broadcast rights to air the latest murder of the day. Millions of advertising dollars are spent to this end by opportunistic marketing companies. An issue as serious as murder in our twisted day has become a mere commodity to be marketed as trivial entertainment. Within 20 years, public morality has dropped catastrophically. The distinct line between good and evil is non-existent. Homosexuals now declare their right to adopt children as their God-given right. We must ask ourselves, what will be the fruit of such hideous actions? God has made man, and true to any manufactured item, God has clearly outlined a set of rules and guidelines to him. So too has God created us perfect. Perfect in that the laws ordained in the Quran are harmonious with our innate nature and social nature. The complexity of the human self is beyond mankind's full comprehension. To play with buttons that we cannot understand will have tragic consequences. It is only recently that biologists have found that a lot more goes on between an infant and his mother during suckling, a lot more than the chemical and nutritional requirements. Essential bonds are formed, all important psychological bonds that affect social behavior later on in life. Family, principles, values found in the heart of religion are flushed from our society as man dares to reinvent his innate, God-given, structured nature. In his current skin of arrogance and pride, he dares to deny the hand that formed him from humble clay. There is an old saying that history repeats itself, and if so, our card is soon to expire. When we look around, there can be no denying that we cannot go on much longer without some serious change. In the recent decade, there's been an unprecedented number of natural disasters plaguing the world. Floods, earthquakes, hurricanes, a level so high that it cannot go unnoticed. The question must then be asked, what was the fate of those before us who were heedless to the word of God?